Hey everybody, welcome to Hey Kids Comics issue 118. This is our year end review. We kind of got excited and went for it early without a real big intro, so I wanted to let you guys know that what you're listening to or about to listen to is the actual show in and of itself. So strap in, stay tuned. It is an awesome ride. Thank you all so much, and we look forward to what we can accomplish together in the new year. Whatever yeah. industry it is, has to react to it. And we're greatly sorry that in Batgirl 36 we offended, you know, instead of saying, dude, it's a comic, we weren't aiming to offend anybody.
I think you can do that two ways, though. I think that you don't have to go one way or the other. You don't have to go, well, it's a comic, but you also don't have to pander. That's the word I like to use a lot when it comes to, like, you know, for example, some of the things that people choose to do in comics, like Gotham Academy, for example, to me, feels like pandering to a specific audience. It's like, look, girls enjoy this comic book, instead of giving them a character that's actually interesting. But, I mean, people love it, so whatever. But, like, with, for example, things where you offend people or things where, like, you create something where people are offended, I think part of that is good, because if you feel something by art, or if you're telling someone something or showing them something and they feel offended or they have a feeling from it, that's kind of the point. But I do understand, though, when people go way off into the deep end. Like, if it's all that it is, like, if all you see is offensive, rude, grotesque material, then yeah, I can understand kind of going, all right, guys, we can do something else. But comics, I've never really seen as that, because with all the different franchises and all the different timelines and all the different possibilities, there's really something for everybody. And I find it really hard to believe that people should change their artistic vision just to pander. Now, if you put out something stupid for stupid reasons, like it looks like you just don't care, I have to admit that, like, for example, I hated the ending of Mass Effect 3, but I wasn't expecting them to actually change it. I just thought it was stupid. Now, other people were, like, making petitions and stuff to change it. That kind of rides a weird gray line area there, because, you know, do you actually demand people change their creative vision for you, or do you just have your own opinion and move the fuck on? It's a lot of different things there.
At what point do you have a surfeit of petitions?
Yeah.
You know, at what point do you wind up saying, okay, here's, you know, they petitioned and they caved, but I don't like the way that they caved for them. We need to have another petition.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, is that if you start giving into certain things and you start giving into everybody, and then you create something that isn't good or that isn't a vision at all.
This homogenized piece of crap that,
which is actually what's starting to happen, in my opinion. Like, you have a lot of things that are trying very, very hard not to do anything crazy outside the box, or are trying to cater to specific people so that they don't have to deal with that backlash. Like, right now, and this is something I kind of, like, I wrote down some notes based off of what you put in here, and it was like, right now in comics, like, if you put a female character or if you put a person of color in your comics, you are instantly under the magnifying glass, and that is a heavy responsibility. Like, I have to wonder, like, why would a comic writer want to put themselves under that scrutiny?
Well, especially, though, if it is, okay, let's say you're Marvel or DC, and you come out with a brand new character. You know, if you were to be like, you know, Stan Lee on that kids show back in the, in like the late 70s, early 80s, and create Baroness Bumblebee. And, you know, Baroness Bumblebee is a person of color, then it's okay. Nobody really notices unless there's just something specifically outrageous, because, like, she's black and neo-Nazi.
Maybe people didn't used to care, but now it's everything. Like,
I don't know. It just seems like it's less so. It's when you go and, like, Falcon's going to become Captain America. That becomes a big deal. You're messing with America. America's not black. Well, no, America's not white either. America's, you know, all of these things. And
I do want to talk about that too. Now that
but yeah, that's one of those things where you kind of, I think it gets less press
The Falcon thing falls under the same territory, I believe, as the female Thor. Yeah. Whereas I think comic writers, instead of, or like comic publishing companies, I think, are kind of dictating these writing decisions. They're kind of making people, instead of creating new characters or adding to the echelon, so to speak, I think they're trying to kind of get people into the idea of other people. Like Miles Morales as Spider-Man is one of my favorite characters that ever happened. However, he got a ton of shit when he first came out because it's Black Spider-Man. I'm like, it's not Black Peter Parker. Just chill out.
Same, it's the same idea as woman writer or Black author. Really?
It's really strange, but
almost like, you're talking about the comic for girls. Like, it's like comics, but for girls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's no point in marketing something as towards a certain gender or anything. I think you should just make a good story. I think one of my biggest complaints about some of the writer friends I know is like, well, how do you write a good female character? I'm like, you write a good character and give it a vagina. I mean, like, there's really no other details there. I mean, you don't have to write differently for each character. And for example, female Thor, I feel like they really dropped the ball because, like, you could have added a new female Asgardian that wasn't Sif. That could have been like this cool character to rival Thor or to talk about the legacy of Thor and the responsibilities that come with that. And instead what we got is, well, she's taking up the hammer now and just pissed off everybody instead of really having a genuine story with it. Because how much cooler would it be to just meet a female who kicked Thor's ass at the beginning of a comic or that somehow woke up with the hammer and but like also, that's her power.
We are also living in the instant feedback. I mean, I grew up in the era of comics where, a month later, a select handful of individuals would have their opinion voiced at the discretion of, the editorial staff based on who got their, their stuff in the mail. The reader in New York City probably had a greater window of opportunity to wind up in, missives from the Master and Master of Kung Fu or in, Fantastic Fans or whatever the hell the Fantastic Letter Page was called. I don't remember what the hell
it was. I don't know.
I don't care. But they, the thing about it is, that was it. And it made it a big deal because someone was recognizing your stuff.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, by the way, thanks for writing in with this insightful. And sometimes it would be complimentary and sometimes it wouldn't. And that also made it seem like, we care enough not to, we're not going to screen this stuff to the point that nothing that we don't agree with gets through.
Right.
And the problem is now everybody has a say. Everybody has a forum. And depending on where you go, anywhere from your small circle of friends to thousands of people who don't know or care who you are, see what you say. And depending on who they are, they're going to put a lot or a little stock in what certain people say.
Well, and because of that,
you have everybody is turned into the old guy from Queens who writes to the paper every day.
Guys, and by the way, I'm telling you this now, and I'm going to leave this in. The show has started. I'm not cutting any of this out. The show has started. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hey Kids Comics, issue 118. It is our year in review. Currently, we're talking about all the topics.
All the topics are in this right now.
In progress. We have a guest with us, Jeremy Eldridge. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining us. Thanks, Cole Houston is with me, my producer, Hetero Life Mate, and hopefully in 2015, the father of my children. Fingers crossed.
So badly.
I am Andrew Farmer, your host. Continue. Where were we? We were talking about the letter bag. We were talking about the instant gratification.
It's kind of like fantasy football. We've actually just picked out the kids. It's a matter of getting them approved by the commissioner.
That's right. Fantasy parenting. So yeah, we are hip deep in this. We are talking about a whole multitude of topics, and I'm not going to cut any of it. This conversation is way too good. Currently, we're talking about all of the topics that I think came to mind when we were talking about a review of 2014's year in comics. Stuff like women in comics. One thing I definitely want to get into tonight, once this part of the conversation is over, is comics in the media. What's happened with that? Jeremy and I and Cole and I, on separate occasions, have multiple conversations about that. And right now we're kind of talking about the always-on art versus industry aspect that we've seen develop over the last year. One thing I want to get both of your opinions on when it comes to this is something that's near and dear to, I know, Cole and I's heart. I don't know, Jeremy and I haven't had this discussion, but this idea of, we've seen a backlash in the convention industry recently over the last year. Cole and I have been fans of comic book conventions for a great many years, and we've seen this backlash where creators are refusing to come to comic book conventions because of cosplayers, and that, you know, this whole idea that conventions should be for comic fans only, when we've seen this growth of
oh, absolutely. Fans. Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of complaint, and there has been for many years, that, like, say, San Diego Comic-Con is now San Diego Media-Con. It shouldn't have the word comic in there. But at the same time, if you go screwing with a brand, who's going to, you know, people are like, oh, I was going to go to Comic-Con. I don't know what this thing is.
SCMC, what is that? Some kind of weird, like, margarita convention?
Yeah, what happened to
it? Could it be, please?
I think it should be.
But the thing about it is, you have these kinds of backlashes, and certainly, you know, the comics have kind of gone to the background. But at the same time, do you want to have that convention or not?
Right.
You're not going to have the sustainability if these things can't evolve. And it's an unfortunate byproduct of that evolution that some things go by the wayside. But yet, you know, despite all of the complaints about the divergence of, you know, San Diego Comic-Con becoming a debasement of what it originally stood for, they have yet to have to go begging.
Yeah.
Before. I mean, if today I wanted to go to San Diego Comic-Con this summer, what I would do is forget it.
Because it's already sold out.
It's already too late. So that underscores the big problem there. It's already too late. It's a done deal.
Yeah.
You can piss and moan about it, but nothing's going to change because the money is there and people are going to go where the money is. But the other thing we've run into, especially this last year, is that I think a lot, like so many things, you know, we've talked on the show about how like the independent comic boom and cash grabs from your big publishers and stuff. Everyone's looking jealously at where everybody else is making money.
Yeah.
And it becomes a bit like the dot-com boom, where it's like, oh, everybody's making millions. Well, no, everybody wasn't making millions, just the smart ones.
Right? Well, I think a lot of it comes down to also, though, that people, especially in the comics industry was a commercial art before, but now it's a commercial art like community on the level of like movies and stuff. And with that comes good things and bad things. On the good side, we get good adaptations, sometimes bad ones. Good adaptations of the comics and stuff that we've been wanting to see. We get more money behind the people who we want to see it. But that does come with the, you know, sex sells and other different factors of other different departments where people get cast in parts where it's like, really? And I think when you look at the Comic-Con changes over the last, you know, 5 years, for example, I think the biggest thing to point out there is that more people are going, which is not by itself a bad thing. It's just the fact that I believe that people have kind of shifted their focus to, they see the people who are making like a lot of money off of it. They're kind of making like that immediate money. Like, I do know that a lot of people, you know, talk about the cosplayers like Negri and other ones who dress provocatively and things like that. But like, I think people are looking at that and that's all they're seeing. And I think that there's something to look at there. Because we do need to kind of look at, why is it that when we look at cosplay or when we look at Comic-Cons, that is the main things that are highlighted? I think that's the first question that we need to ask there, because...
But is it also part and parcel of the get-off-my-lawn syndrome of a lot of these comics? Because you don't hear this kind of thing from, like Brian K. Vaughan or Scott Snyder. They're happy to have them. They love the fans. They want to be there for their fans. You get these guys that have been around forever that are like, this wasn't what my comic book convention looked like.
Yeah.
There aren't enough acne pimple-faced nerds. There's pretty girls here. What's going on? Nobody's spending any money because they're looking at the pretty girls. Like, what? That's their that's their complaint, is that they're making more money at these conventions, but the people that are drawing the people to the conventions aren't spending money. So, like, I don't understand what they want. Is it just a chance to bitch? Is that all?
Oh, actually, well, I will tell you personally from experience of over 20 years in the convention scene, and I have been... as I've often said on various shows, I've been a part of every aspect of conventions, from a convention attendee to a convention producer and promoter. I've been a guest. I've been a...
A poet, a pawn, and a king.
I've been, rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief.
That's right. I've been up, doctor, down, over,
doctor,
and
lawyer,
under,
and convention promoter.
And I know one thing.
Let's just say I know a thing or two about a thing or two. But the one thing you will prevailing thing I've seen throughout all that history is there's always somebody bitching. That's true. Be it the dealers who are bitching that, you know, I made $15,000 in the first 10 minutes of the last show. Is that this thing sucks? I haven't made $50 all day. And, you know, but then they're back at the next show. Right. And the one after that, and the one after that. It's like, shut up.
Well, it's also the adaptation. No one likes change. No one ever does. When you look at, like, for example, one of my favorite teachers at the Art Institute, his name was Johann Klingler, and he talked about a lot of the artists that worked with him at, like, Disney and stuff like that. And one of the best pieces of advice he ever got is, like, always learn new things. And I think that part of the issue with a lot of the comic writers and stuff right now is that they're focusing on what used to sell or what they used to be able to do. And I think a lot of people are afraid of the idea that they have to change what they're doing, or they have to, like, cater or pander to anyone specifically. And that's not exactly a negative thing by itself, but the way that they go about saying it, like writing news articles and saying, I'm not going to show up to anywhere with cosplayers. I'm like, well, then you're not going to make any money, bro. Like, it's you've got to have a balance. Like, if you say, hey, I don't want to go to some place, or, like, I don't want any characters that have, like, ruined my vision around me, then I can kind of understand that. Like, if you put your heart and soul into creating a character, and then someone comes up as the quote-unquote sexy version of it, and you're kind of like, you know, like, I can understand why that would be hurtful, and I think that's part of the thing about... You know,
it's sexy Dory from Finding Nemo. That's a fish! It should never be sex!
Next year, all con
2015.
Yeah, Andy, that was the challenge. We want to see someone at all con 2015. Sexy Dory.
I'm going to go cry now.
If somebody goes to Sexy Dory, I'll go as Hunky Dory. What? What? I'm here all night.
I see what you did there.
Oh my God! Okay, so there's something I want to go right to this because it's near and dear to Cole's heart, and I want to know.
This isn't convention related, I do want to talk about.
Please go.
One of the big problems we're going to be looking at in the convention scene going into this year and next, and this is rather what I was getting at, is looking jealously at what others have done. One of the problems we've seen here locally, and it's played out in a much bigger way nationally, I think we've heard about some of these on a national level, but not all of them,
okay,
is that you have first-time convention promoters.
Here we go.
Who want an instant out-of-the-box Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Right.
They want what Comic-Con spent 50 years building or whatever it is. They want what Creation spent the last 30 years building. They want what all of these big conventions that have been around for a long time have done. The only ones who've ever pulled that off are like Wizard World, where they went around, you've got a convention, we've got the money, we're going to buy it, we're going to take it over, partially ruin it. But, you know, the big problem you're running into is a lot of these guys, they go out there and they'll hire a bunch of guests, and they imagine, and I saw this happen firsthand, that they're going to make what they need to pay for everything off ticket sales. You can't create out of nothing a major convention unless you have 110% of the venture capital in your pocket.
Well, what was the convention with the ball pit that happened here?
I know. It was
the Tumblr one where they didn't have
any. Yeah, it's the Tumblr convention.
They lost. Okay, there was this big popular podcast called Welcome to Night Vale. That was supposed to be there, and they didn't end up, like, they were like, hey, we paid for our own hotel, and all we wanted to do was get paid for the venue because we were coming out there for the fans, and then they were like, oh, well, we don't have enough money. And, like, they were about to get shut down, like, I think at the end of their first day, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And they were asking attendees on site for money, and I'm just like, okay.
Well, there was EpicCon in my hometown of Dayton, Ohio.
Yes, that was the biggest recent one.
And you could watch it disintegrate, like, online. And that's the thing about this, the instant, that's the upside and the downside to this always-on instant response world that we live in now. Whereas Cole and I, by the time, and probably Jeremy to some lesser extent, since he's the young buck on the show right now, It would become mythology before you would hear about it.
Yeah.
You know, you would hear about a convention 3 years later that something horrible happened at, you know, and by that point, it would be like,
or, you know, there was a series of conventions in the Dallas area back, you know, years and years ago in the 80s that started out. There were the Dallas Fantasy Fairs, and they just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where toward the end, you would show up at the hotel and be told, oh, it's not at this hotel.
Yeah.
They didn't pay their bills. And you went driving around trying to find out where it got off to.
Right, it became a weird rave.
If you make people do that now, you lose tons of money if you do that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Eventually that caught up to them and they couldn't find venues anymore. And they couldn't, because they were trying so hard to be bigger and better and more than they were before. But the other thing is that, you know, so many times even then I would hear about somebody deciding to start up a convention and they would take the money and run. It made it very difficult for first timers.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Andrew and I will go on at length about AllCon constantly.
Yeah. And
get ready, because it's 2015 now, baby.
We got like 3 months, so the hatches. We're going to talk about it nonstop.
But the thing about it is, when AllCon started, I've had a long personal association with them because Mrs. Jedi Cole and I were the first dealers that they approached for their dealer room, and the only ones that didn't back out on them because they were a first-year show.
Yeah.
The reason for that was there was a long history in the years prior of first-year shows taking the money and running.
So I think what we're saying is that so in the world of comic books, I imagine in the world of gaming as well, which, you know, a different conversation with Jeremy, which I would like to have at some point, maybe offline or on a different show, would be the whole doxying, swatting thing. That would be an awesome conversation to have. But, you know, in the world of comics, in the world of gaming, in the world of independent, anything that you're trying to do by yourself, kickstarting, Indiegogoing, in the world of conventions, we're living on a double-edged sword of, on one side, every internet troll in the world that gets offended by anything can spout off and run off at the mouth and make life worse for everybody who's enjoying something. On the other side of that coin is the idea that all of a sudden accountability is important.
Yeah.
If you are going to do what Cole was saying, if you're going to put on a half-ass show, or if you're going to take the money and run, or if you're going to, you know, pull a Camelot 3000 or whatever and put out your last book 5 years later, you're going to have to be held accountable to that by your fans now. You can't ignore the letters sent in the mail anymore. This is all real time.
Well, and part of that comes down to, like, you know, you have a lot of people in the instant gratification culture that are wanting, like, the same results in half the time, like Cole said, and it's like, they're wanting, instead, you know, you see it all the time where people are like, I'm going to invite these cosplay guests and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, but, like, cosplay people are great. I'm not going to bash them, but they're not the people who are going to bring the majority of the audience to cons. And it's like, you put all your eggs in this one basket. It's like, okay, well, we've got this cosplay guest, and we've got all this other stuff. And it's like, yeah, but I mean, like, I go to Dallas Comic Con and other people go to Dallas Comic Con because they want to see the actors and stuff. If you even get one headliner that works, you're going to get a lot more people that way and stuff like that. And so bad business is always going to be bad business. You see it a lot with, like, aspiring independent creators of any medium, like art, cosplay, gaming, anything. When you don't focus on business, that's why a lot of people fall short. You have to know business, and that's why a lot of people, when they finally get that convention, they go, and they run away.
Right. All right. Okay. So enough of that. We're going to put a pin in that for now. I got a question for Cole. In the last 3 or 4 months, and now, and coming up through now, and then into the whole next year of our lives, as fans of anything, whether it be comics or TV or movies or games or novels or whatever, art, prints, posters, we are going to be inundated. It's going to be all holes filled with Star Wars for the next year.
That does actually have bearing on comics because, you know, Marvel has now stood control of...
This last year, they took back control.
What's funny is that Marvel once tried to control every aspect of its part of the industry, and now that Disney owns Marvel and Star Wars, it's almost like we've gone full circle. It's now Disney is controlling every aspect of all of its properties, where I think Gladstone years ago used to publish Disney comics.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they're currently and have been for some time published by Marvel. Take that, Steve Jeppy, founder of...
Wow! Wow! Calling you out!
Shit just got
this
real.
This show just got gangsta on Gladstone Comics.
It seems like there's this weird little, you know, accidental war of attrition that's being won by Marvel when it doesn't matter anymore because they're not even really Marvel anymore.
Right, and that's the other thing. Okay, let's talk about Star Wars first, but we're coming back to that. I'm really excited about this show. I'm really worked up. But the thing is, we've got...
apologies to Steve Jeppy, who...
No apologies.
Company
no
I
apologies
for.
To Steve Jeppy. Yeah, cutting you off, Steve Jeppy. Marvolution all the way. 2015 is the year of Marvolution.
Bring back Viva la Marvolution.
Viva la Marvolution. We've seen, okay, so they announced like 4 months ago or 5 months ago that there was going to be a new Star Wars number one. Now, what we've all, at this point, there is somewhere, depending on who you ask, there's somewhere between 35 and 50 variant covers to Star Wars number one that is going to be hitting. There are at least 35 covers. Certain comic shops are getting their, like Mile High's getting their own cover.
Golden Apple in California.
Right.
So many. Yeah, I've noticed that, a lot of that.
And here's the weird thing about it, right? I don't know what the ratios were like when you worked for Diamond Cole, but like there's some of them that are just the standard. Like, but the standard starts at 50. You have to order 50 issues to get one variant. Okay.
So yeah, that's about, you know, there was in the, like the times when I was an actual proper retailer and had access to ordering from Diamond. Mm-hmm. It was anywhere from 25 to 50. And even prior to that, it tended to be about 50.
Right. And then some of them are, you have to, this is the weird one for me, right? Because I was going in and I was researching and because I wanted to know, there's one issue in particular that I want, and it's the cover that's like the old Kenner action figure that's drawn up like
oh
Kenner
yes that's
figure.
One of two that I would love to have the
so
other
see I'm hoping luck. I'm yeah. hoping because it's owned by Marvel now I just want a Scotty Young cover
it's, oh it's there oh it's
of
done
Star
already
Wars. It is
yeah that's one of the 50s that's one of the ones you have to
oh right I remember
get.
That
but in order to get the Star Wars number one that looks like, and I think yours as well, Cole, the Jax one. Is that the one you were talking about?
Jax, with the Uncle Buck Jackson one.
In order to get Uncle Buck, in order to get those, you have to have
the look at that. Look at that one side by side with the poster art for Uncle Buck, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Really, really, I love that movie because they shoot a bear in the ass with a shotgun lamp, and that
I
is
had
a sentence,
no idea.
That is a sentence that no one should ever utter in their entire lives. Shot a bear in the ass with a shotgun lamp. But if the ratio for ordering those books is you have to order 150% more of Star Wars number one than you did Original Sin number 8 to get those covers.
Oh, wow.
So if you ordered 8 copies of Original Sin number 8, you have to order, what, 12 copies of Star Wars number 1, and you have access to that cover. Like, is there some kind of quadratic
equation?
Oh,
I see. So there's an algorithm.
Yeah, exactly. But is it?
Oh, that is dirty pool.
Is this the year, Cole? Is this the year of Star Wars comics? Is this 1984 all over again?
I think what's going to happen here is that, yes, in many ways, Star Wars is going to get noticed again. And that's really, you know, because I'm so steeped and silly for Star Wars and silly for, it's like this, you know, it's like Daenerys' dragon eggs. You keep putting them in the fire and they keep hatching. And, you know, every time that this property should taper, I mean, you know, the Star Trek franchise, God bless, it's been around longer and has always maintained a presence. But it's had more quiet, dormant periods than Star Wars ever has, or ever will, likely. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that Joseph Campbell declared that the modern mythology, in which case he also had a subtext, there was sort of an unwritten subtext that Star Trek could suck it. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think this is going to be, a juggernaut of excitement, you know, because it's a whole new era, because everything Dark Horse created is null and void, which to me is personally a golden age, because if it didn't happen on the screen, it never happened in my world. But and that's the big screen, I want to point out, excluding the Clone Wars cartoon.
Okay.
As a huge fan of just Star Wars, I haven't really read many of the comics. I've read a lot of the books, I will admit that. Like,
you
I'm
didn't
a huge fan.
Miss much, Jeremy. You
yeah, I'm a huge fan of like the Michael A. Stackpole like X-Wing series and stuff like that. Like, that's when I started
X-Wing
reading them.
Pilot Ewok, apparently, at some
that's lovely.
You missed an entire comic of C-3PO fighting Boba Fett too. So ride that out.
I wouldn't see that as like a Street Fighter. Fight!
Yeah, it's the shortest game. It's me playing Street Fighter. It's just me hitting the A button. Like,
it's me playing Street Fighter against anyone from the age of, like, 3 up.
It's like, son of a bitch, stop taking E-Honda. I can't get out of the corner.
Well, I think what I really like about this, though, is that a lot of people have been... The nostalgia effect has been used so often these days that it's nice to see, like, for example, what I really like about the new designs for, like, the X-Wings and the Stormtrooper helmets is that they actually reference the original concept art for the Stormtroopers and everything like that by McQuarrie,
yes.
I believe his last name is.
Yes.
Yeah. No, Jeremy, you're walking into the lion's den right now. I'm warning you.
Well, I mean, I'm not like
in a good way. In a good way.
Yeah. That was his last time.
You have met your Yoda. You have met your Yoda.
It is the tame lion's den.
Yeah. Just say you will be.
Okay. I really like what they're doing, because it gives you a chance to wipe the slate clean. Like, that doesn't mean that people can't still enjoy those stories, but I really like the idea of having somebody look at it with a fresh perspective and go, you know, this was really cool about the older concepts. This was really cooler about the, like, you can bring back that sense of wonder, because it's not the same thing over and over again. It's like, you can finally bring something new to Star Wars. And I want that. Like, I want to be excited for Star Wars again. I haven't been excited for Star Wars in a great long time. And, you know, like, even though everybody has mixed reactions to that first little teaser or whatever like that, I have to admit that, you know, the minute I see the Millennium Falcon, I'm on, you know, like, I'm on board. And maybe that's a dirty trick, and it kind of is, but I really kind of look forward to seeing a new perspective on a franchise that I've, you know, grown up with. And it'd be really nice to see somebody not tied down by an expanded universe, by prequels, by all this other stuff. Like, yeah, they're going to use those stories to continue, and they're using the same actors and stuff like that for the older roles, but they're clearly trying to go, look, you know, we can't, like, there's no way you can keep something going for this many years and just keep using the same face, the same story, the same lather, rinse, repeat.
Shut up. You shut up. Han Solo will always be Han Solo. You shut
trust
up.
Me. If there's anybody who loves the Corellians, it's Jeremy. like, Dash Rendar is my favorite ship. Shadows of the Empire, the Outrider,
I wish we didn't pre-screen you on this, but please never mention that. Never again.
He's so insane. It's so retarded, and I love it.
It's Prince Shizor.
Yes. Oh, yeah, who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew? I need to watch that movie again. Can that movie come out in 2015 as a major release so I can watch Free Enterprise?
We're getting a Han Solo movie now, so yeah.
I just really want Han Solo to have the earring. That's what I really want. If he could have the earring, so yes,
and a 26-year-old wife. He's like dumped Leia for some.
Think about Marvel this way, right? They all of a sudden have this. They have this juggernaut machine that they've built. Think of it like the Death Star, right?
Yeah.
They built this giant space that's no moon, that's a space station.
Yeah.
They built this space station that's built for one purpose, and all of a sudden, they have their purpose. Star Wars is what they've been building to all along, and it just clicked into place, and they have mechanism.
You know, it's almost as though the you know, the 80s have come back with the all the variant covers and stuff, and it's almost like that was just building so that they could pull off this Star Wars thing. Like,
right.
let's go ahead and set a precedent so it doesn't look like we're doing this just for Star Wars.
Right.
So when Star Wars comes out, it says, yeah, we're going to have 50 different covers, some of which only one copy will ever be printed in the world. So get out there and get them.
And, well, it's not only that. It's like, okay, so we've got this – we've all of a sudden have this giant the strength of this movie house behind us, right? Like Disney, Star Wars, Disney, Lucasfilms, Marvel. Like, yeah. This – if it was the future, that would be the alliance that brings the – that, yeah. That's Skynet. That's the thing that destroys the world, right? And so – And the one license that could rule them all, you know, is Star Wars. Like, you can do comics, you can do TV shows, you can do movies, you can do video games, you can do whatever you want with Star Wars, and people will just throw money at you with, like, a cannon just out of their car, just go-goosh, just like Mad Max Fury Road.
You know, was it Shadows of the Empire's proof of that?
Don't, Cole, why are you so bitter? Why are you so bitter?
It promised big and delivered little.
You were so bitter still.
I actually championed it before I knew what it was.
Can you? Okay, I want to, because this is our end of the year, beginning of the year show.
Okay.
From Cole, how big will Star Wars be this year?
I think that this really is, because this is your building period. This is your thing where, you know, we've already got the tail end of 2014. We're sneaking that out at the, you know, like, tomorrow you're going to be embroiled in Black Friday. So, oh, Star Wars.
Yeah, they were so smart. They were
that was the shrewdest thing, because people actually forgot. They got, like, woke up at 10 in the morning the next day because they were still passed out from seeing the hate
drunk,
ball.
Drunk on hate ball.
Yeah. They had binge-watched 27 seconds of Star Wars footage.
And just lost their mind.
For like 10 hours, and then they missed the big sale over at Best Buy. So, you know, this has a kind of, it's like the gods have come down from Olympus yet again to grace us with their presence. And I think this is going to be a very big thing. I think you're going to see Star Wars, the brand just wouldn't die anyway.
Right.
But
it couldn't.
You're going to see more Star Wars stuff than you can shake a stick at. The fact that now you have at least got some imagery out there, you're also allowing for some merchandising well in advance. You know, 9-10 months in advance of release, you're going to get the BB-8 and Finn and others on...
I looked at the trading cards. It's so cute.
I looked at the trading cards from Entertainment Earth, which were a brilliant idea, where they revealed the names of the characters in Entertainment Earth as facsimiles of what the old Topps trading cards would have looked like.
Right, right.
And those are the only two I know.
So Star Wars is going to dominate next year. Just dominate across the board. Like, forget anything else. Why is anything else happening? Like, in any fandom whatsoever, because Star Wars...
But at the same time, you know, it's like, okay, go back to the 60s. Batman television series could not be more different than the comic. Yet the comic saw record sales.
Right, right.
Because of it. And perhaps because you didn't have the kind of instantaneous world we have today where somebody can go online and bitch about how my childhood was ruined because the sweet, innocent Starfire I knew from Teen Titans is a sex-mongering slut. You didn't have the ability for people to just go out and tell the entire world daily that, you know, I was expecting Zonk and Bonk and Kapowee, and Batman, like, broke a guy's nose and shattered another guy's kneecaps. And
pretty sure Batman's first introduction was him throwing a guy into a vat of acid. Like, I'm almost positive that's how that first one ended.
That's just the first movie? Yes, it did.
Well, actually, like, the first comic.
The first comic, he just says, well, he deserved it. And
he
I'm
also,
like,
what? It was confusing.
I thought he was very callous because he would, like, smash somebody's face with one of those big... hooks on a pulley, you know, on a ship.
And he'd just be like, he deserved it. And I'm like, what the fuck do you do?
Yeah, you deserve to have the front of your face and the back of your head.
He also wore purple gloves and toted a gun, which
was confusing. He was packed to eat in the early days.
That explains so much about my psychosis right there.
I'm not mistaken, he was not only packing heat, he was carrying the gun that killed his parents.
That's
really cool. They should bring that back.
What? That's just what I'm going to say to that.
It's both cool and rather frightening.
Is
that meant that Bruce Wayne had to, like, through some sort of shadow organization, bid on the gun that killed
on eBay.
saving that one bullet or like saving that gun or something like that would be really cool. Like, I think that's a cool story. I would love to see that brought back.
Yeah,
that's cool to me.
It would be almost like, you know, if Batman had been created 30 years later, it would have been the Punisher.
Yeah. Almost, yeah.
And he would have used Joe Chill's gun to kill absolutely everybody.
Every single person. So
literally everybody.
I know we talked a little bit earlier about it, but I kind of want to go back to... We talked about kind of the pandering aspects and the negative aspects of you know, the whole movement. I don't want to call it the women's movement in comics. That's pandering. But the parody in comics.
So,
right?
So way to pander when talking about pandering.
Right? I know. I'm an ass. But there's a few things that happened this year that I do want to talk about. And one of them I know that both of you want to talk about from different perspectives is this the longest backlash I've ever seen in anything like this happened this year, which was the Milo Manara variant Spider-Woman cover.
I do want to point out, though, that about 10 years ago, Marvel, when they were 10 or 15 years ago, when they were publishing Beauty and the Beast comics, there was a similar cover by Manara. But the fact that Belle's the meringue on Belle's dress kind of obscured her ass, so they got away with it. That was actually a tribute cover.
I think that's the name of Ultra Cafe's next album, is Obscured Her Ass.
Which is actually a Scandinavian word.
Yeah, it's all one word.
Obscured Her Ass.
Obscured Her Ass.
Obscured Her Ass.
Because, you know, Cole and I come from a period, and especially Cole, and I'm not calling you old, all right?
No,
I'm not.
Old.
I'm not calling you old.
Don't,
but
don't worry, I'll call me old.
But the
old man brain.
And we've talked about this on the show before when this initially happened, but can you forgive a guy for doing what he has always done? Like, how shocked was this 80-year-old Italian dude for getting, you know, getting this backlash for something he's done 1,000 times? That's,
you know,
his signature pose.
You know, to paraphrase Jules Winfield, what's a brother to do? He's Italian.
Right! Like, that's what he does. He's done it forever. So, wait, but I want to get Jeremy's. We haven't heard Jeremy's, and Jeremy wrote me a diatribe on this that I didn't read because I want to hear it come out of his mouth. So,
It was a really quick thing because, like,
It was not.
As an aspiring artist, on the subject of that, there's a lot of interpretation in gray area as to, like, the artist's intent and the viewer's assumption.
I think,
like,
in that case there were 50 shades.
Yeah. Like, the problem is that, number one, it was a variant cover. And so I feel like for people to believe that is the only, you know, that is not the only representation of her at all. It is an artistic choice, but I think that it's writing a very fine line when you try to say that you can determine what is or isn't sexist by the anatomy of a pose. On that note, can you choose to censor or decide what can be shown based off of your personal preferences or biases? I mean, you know, if you start to limit all views of anatomy that don't reflect a specific party, then where is the variation in comics, and how do we get all those really cool, crazy styles that we get? Like, you know, like, some of my favorite artists are very strange styles, and I don't think that we would have had that if people were going like, oh, well, her back is bent a weird way, which, by the way, a lot of 3D artists and actual models have pulled off that pose and created the same camera angle, so it's not as quote-unquote impossible as people try to make it out to sound. But I think, like, when people act outraged about a pose that Spider-Man does on the cover of almost every fucking comic, like, it's really hard for me to be really, you know, take you seriously, because there was actually a video I watched a while back that was like, you know, there were, like, close-up shots of Spider-Man's crotch, like, 90% of the time, and nobody bats an eye, but the minute you put a girl on a building,
Yeah, you're constantly getting spider teabagged.
Well, we found the variant cover for the X-Men book with Nightcrawler with his tail precariously positioned, drawn by Milo Manara. Like, he obviously isn't doing that. You know, okay, so yes.
Also, the thing about it is that cover predated the Spider-Woman cover.
Right.
Yeah. Which should have sent a signal to someone. And, you know, everybody wants to, you know, do we blame Manara? I mean, is he responsible? And, you know, to take the approach, well, you know, what are you going to tell the 80-year-old Italian guy who's, for the last 70 years, has been drawing, I mean, the man was an erotic comic artist.
Right. That's
At
what he
what
did.
At what point did the Marvel management decide, hey, let's get the erotic comic artist? I mean, like, why wasn't Reed Waller hired to do covers for Little Mermaid when Kate Worley, who was writing Omaha the Cat Dancer that he was illustrating for Marvel, you know, why wasn't he brought in to give her some nice big jugs and a little bit of a camel fish toe?
I can't understand for the life of me the entitlement perspective where it's like, well, this person shouldn't draw this kind of art. And it's like, well, no. Like, number one, if Marvel sought them out, or if Marvel goes, hey, you know, we want a variant cover from this, it's like, you know, you go into a motorcycle store and, oh my God, there's motorcycles here. It's like, yeah, it's a motorcycle store. Like, you know, like, that's what's going to be there. When you get a Milo, it's like, his art is very erotic in nature. Like, there's no false advertising. He didn't, like, slip anything under the rug and go, like, hey, I'm going to, you know, put this picture of a penis on the front cover, like, Little Mermaid.
I think we commented on that. We said, how many proofs probably went to Marvel, and they chose the one that got used?
So, and I hate that there's this kind of, like, image of censoring an artist. Like, if you're making offensive stuff that is, like, destructive, then, yeah, I understand where we need to create commentary for it. But a woman posing on a roof is not destructive. Like, it is simply a woman posing on a roof. And that's where it goes right back to, what is the artist's intention? I guarantee you, Milo's not sitting there going, I'm going to sit here to objectify people and piss off women. Like, that's not... An artist trying to create a picture is not sitting there going, who can I piss off today? They're thinking about their own expression and interpretation
Keep in mind,
anatomy or building.
At the same time that this is getting released, there is a comic called Tarot, which is an amazingly weird thing out there where there is a main character with a haunted vagina. Oh. I'm going to say that just a haunted vagina exists in comics. At the same time that we are outraged because Milo Manara, but I will say this.
Wow, that's even better than the character. I was challenged back in the days when I was emceeing the Dallas Web Comic Expos to, you know, I was asked, where's my web comic? And I had to point out that I was did strictly analog comics. But I was...
Andrew, come on.
I did take up the challenge up to a point that I never quite finished, but I got the idea that maybe I could do a webcomic Ghost Dinosaur, which was about the ghost of a Stegosaurus that died in, like, the, you know, Triassic, and it fights crime by, you know, doing kind of a dead man sort of taking over people's body, except that it has to enter through their ass.
Oh, jeez.
And so they feel every one of those plates and spikes.
Oh, man. That's
this is turning into a completely different type of show.
Yeah. So I was trying to get Manara to do the illustrations for me.
So outside of...
Curse how the old geezer wants a fortune.
Outside of the knee-jerk reaction that Marvel had, which is them apologizing... And they
pulled his future covers. Like, he was going to do other covers, and they pulled those too. And I was like, wow.
We finally figured out that, and I've seen imagery that was side by side of a Manara erotic image where one was in the exact same position, except she wasn't wearing anything over her nether regions, and a giant crowd of people were, a throng were crowding around to observe.
So artistic.
Yeah, but that was in keeping with the bulk of his work. I mean, how you can take a man who's got like a 50 or 60 year career of drawing, you know, naked women in all manner of sexual.
Let's keep in mind he also draws sexualized dudes. Like, right. You can't just say sexualized people in general.
Yeah,
like,
he draws sex. That's what he does.
The bulk of his career has been as an erotic artist.
Exactly.
And, you know, that would be like in the 70s hiring Harry Reams to be on your kid's show.
Right. Yeah. But here's the other side of that, right? He's really good at it. Yeah. That's the other thing. It's like, I know that's going to maybe offend people, and I don't care. He's really good at what he does. Like, and whether it's dudes or chicks or whatever, man, he's good at it. That's what he does. If you bring him in, he's going to draw some sexy stuff, and you're going to like it, and you're going to be offended that you like it. That's the problem. I think that's the basis of all of this, is that you're offended that it looks good. But
that's a good point, because the thing about it is, if you're going to be a successful erotic artist with that long a career, you have to first be a damn good artist.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
right.
Where it all starts.
And
but what bottom line is, was it ever a good idea to hire him? Regardless, it's not like there are only three good comic artists in the world and the other two were busy that week.
Right.
You know, I'm sure Alex Ross catches the occasional bone thrown his way. There's countless other options that were available to Marvel. Who decided that they were such a big fan of Minara's work that they needed to have him?
But the thing that I think that happened was, he's been working for them for so long, and he really has, probably 20 years, working with Marvel, doing covers, that nobody thought this was going to cause a problem. Everybody thought it was going to be an homage.
Yeah.
That let's throw him a bone. This guy's 80. Let's let him get a couple more in. You know, let's let him do some things that are kind of, because nobody thought Spider-Woman wasn't Star Wars. Spider-Woman wasn't Guardians of the Galaxy fresh out the gate from the movie. It's Spider-Woman. She's fairly popular, but it's Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
Like nobody thought this was going to happen. Nobody at Marvel thought this was going to happen. I certainly didn't think this was going to happen. None of the comic insiders that I know thought this was going to happen.
Well, the worst part,
it did happen.
Right.
The worst part of it is, if you look at that side by side, it's so painfully obvious that all Minara did was just trace that old illustration and repaint it as Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
Like his famous illustration. You know, like that's his famous work. If you search for Milo Minara, that's what comes up. Like, stop it. So, but. So,
be like,
outside
you know,
of,
a big
I'm reining in. I'm reining everybody in. Outside of what happened, you know, like the knee jerk reaction from Marvel.
Yeah.
They apologized. They pulled the cover. Like, they didn't though. It was released.
I think they also temporarily canceled the movie, The Interview.
They did. They did.
And then even though they had nothing to do with it. It's rather strangely ironic that later on The Interview would get canceled for entirely different reasons.
Right. Everybody, all year long, The Interview was canceled for like a week or two.
Yeah.
Every time something
Everybody
happened.
Everybody wanted it on that.
Right. But what we saw come out of that was good. Actual good in the end. And what I mean by that is we saw you know, Marvel kind of refocused. They said, we can't do this. Like we've got to treat our female characters as people characters now.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen is, every time we do something like this, regardless of whether they were right or wrong in this case, because I still don't think they were right in this case.
Agreed.
But we're going to refocus some energy towards this. And what we got out of it was, an end of the year, the one direct thing that happened was, at the end of the year, we got a swanky unisex awesome costume for Spider-Woman at the end of the year that isn't super spandexy boobs hanging out all over the place, look at my ass Spider-Woman. It's a Spider-Woman that can kick some ass, you know.
See, I didn't really like that costume.
Damn it, Jeremy!
Well,
damn
see,
it,
like,
Jeremy.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Why did it not come out of Shadows of the Empire, Jeremy?
No. Oh well, I'll. Shadows of the Empire is truly a masterpiece of modern. No, I'm just kidding. The reason why is because I believe that Batgirl did it first and did it better, and then I think Spider-Gwen is still my favorite because Spider-Gwen was like a completely different. Like, it wasn't just a palette swap. It was like, it was white, it had purples and blues. Her shoes were blue for no reason, but you could see it working really well with like animation and stuff. And then like Batgirl had her costume designed. And then Spider-Woman felt like Batgirl, but with a Spider-Woman mask, and that was it.
But that's the thing. One thing that we talk about, Jeremy, I know that you might not know this, but one thing we talk about on the show all the time is the fact that the DC does it first better almost every time. And
that
then Marvel picks up the baton and runs with it. But at least they picked up the baton and ran with it. You know, like the whole the Batgirl, yes, the Batgirl recostuming into what they quoted as the hipster Batgirl, which actually was just a modern Batgirl costume. You know, the
who can't apparently keep her head straight. In every picture, her head's cocked to the side, like her neck.
I resemble that remark in every
selfie. I think part of what happens is that the weight inside the bat ear shifts.
Ah, okay.
There's like a giant ball of mercury or something out there.
See, I
don't know why it was put in there in the first place, but it's too late.
It's too late.
I liked Batgirl's design. I just thought Spider-Gwen was better, just because I thought it was way more inventive.
I wholly agree with you. That was awesome. And the fact that they did that and gave her own comic and made it what it was, and they're talking about bringing it into main continuity after the whole the Spider-Verse thing is over, is so awesome. You know, I think that we're seeing a tipping point for all the good and bad, and we have to have that in every revolution.
Yeah.
You know, for every revolution has its positives and its negatives, but I think we're finally seeing in 2014 that, you know, the idea of a parody in comics, we got an all-female X-Men team, which is awesome. And written by what's his name, the husband and wife team that ruined New Mutants for me. What's their name?
Oh,
damn it!
I do not know.
Is it the Simonsons? Or?
Yes. And it's written by, because
Have a history of ruining things,
right? Oh, but it's written by Chris Claremont and some of the Simonsons. It's, you know, Chris Claremont did so much for the female comic perspective in his time. He did more than anybody else, and he's come back to do this. We've got that. We've got Spider-Gwen. We've got She-Thor, which
Miss
is
Marvel.
Awesome. The Miss Marvel that is, you know, the top of everyone's list for anything having to do with females in comics in 2014, which it should be. We finally, I think, broken through the plane. I think that we finally got through, and we're going to get the parody.
I think they're
character.
Not afraid anymore.
Thank God for that. Amen for that. That's absolutely.
I do want to point out something on the whole She-Thor thing. She-Thor. Because She-Thor.
I want to say that for Natalie.
That was one of the members of Othon Cafe. She-Thor.
Oh, so whoa! There's a giant elk now. What happened? I don't.
Yeah.
You just saw Lord of the Rings, didn't you?
No, I have not seen that yet. But, it's Indra She-Thor. But still, anyway, enough about the front man of Ultron Cafe.
Right.
Ultron Cafe, should I say. But the thing is that She-Thor has a precedent beyond a cash grab and beyond all of the obvious, let's cast Laurence Fishburne as Perry White in the movie. Let's have a black actor as Johnny Storm. Let's change everybody. Thor's been a guy for 60 years. We need to have him be a girl because there aren't enough girls in comics. But the thing about it is, we forget that Thor was a frog for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with frogifying comics.
I wish it did. I wish it did so hard.
Because there was not a big movement, a big push to bring amphibians to the forefront, because they had been rather forgotten in the course of comics. I think there was like one salamander in the Batman family at one point.
Damn it.
But that was about
it. Damn
it. Or was a hellbender or something. But, for the most part,
Let us not forget Beta Ray Bill. Let's not forget Beta
Yet
Ray
again,
Bill.
See, the thing about it is, when Thor became a frog, there was an ad campaign. I actually have one of the original comic shop ad posters on the door to my studio. It is, what have they done to the mighty Thor now? And it's a Walt Simonson image of a frog holding the hammer of Thor with a little Thor helmet kind of at a jaunty angle on its head. And when Beta Ray Bill was introduced, Marvel actually produced another poster, which I wish I had, showing Beta Ray Bill smashing the Thor logo. And it says, oh no, what have they done to the mighty Thor this time?
Yeah.
And that became a prevailing theme. So, you know, get off your high horse about this being some sort of feminist cash grab or some other crap like that. Thor has been put through his paces. There was a while, he used to be Thor, but now he's not. Thunderstrike.
Oh, Thunderstrike.
Thunderstrike. Yeah. That's the spoken version.
Okay.
Oh, here we are. This is the Thunderstrike song.
Yeah.
He used to be Thor, but now he's not. Thunderstrike.
Oh.
Thunderstrike.
Okay.
Yeah, there you
have it. That's the song.
But the Thunderstrike era, there was a period where Thor stopped utilizing Donald Blake as a conduit and decided to hang around on Earth as Sigurd Jarlsson.
I
as his
that.
Secret identity, he was a one of those hot rivet pitching steel workers up on the high high rise, upon the girders and the high rises being built in New York, and apparently took a hell of a lot of time off so he could fight the Midgard Serpent and other shit. You know, it just, I don't know how he held that job down, but, you know, he decided to have a secret identity for a while.
I guess for me, I think when I look at the She-Thor thing, I think the biggest part of it was the timing.
She-Zor.
She-Zor.
I think the timing of it was right around when everything else was going on. So I think, like, a lot of the people were kind of like, right after this, right after that, right after this, like, oh, women are trying to take our comics. I'm like, well, that's stupid, first of all. Second of all, I really think Marvel dropped the ball when they could have created a new character. That's my personal idea there. Because, like, for example, the reason why I like Spider-Gwen is because, like, they took Gwen and made her a spider person in her own universe and made her a main character. And I like it. For She-Thor, for example, I feel like they really missed an opportunity to create a new character rather than, you know, just put on, you know, the Thor helmet and create a new character that could either rival Thor or beat Thor or create a, like, actual movement. I think that comics are playing it a little safe right now because they're, like, afraid to piss off too many people. And I think that, like, if a girl would have come in and beat Thor's ass, I think that would have made a little bit more of an impression than, like, she's Thor now. And I'm like, that's just my opinion, is that I believe that if you would have brought in a new character that could have established, like, a new continuity or maybe even her own comic, like Spider-Gwen did, it would have been really cool to me.
That's a valid point, but also at the same time, with the advent of Spider-Gwen, what you would have had is people getting pissed off saying, oh, it's just another Spider-Gwen. Granted, you wouldn't have had as vocal.
Yeah.
But it would still would have been, because the bottom line is,
if she's an Asgardian, you could do anything with her, though.
But what's going to have to happen is comics, like so many other industries, are going to have to stop being so reactive to absolutely everything.
Yes.
We cannot go through the rest of eternity being terrified of pissing someone off, because we've always pissed someone off. Now they just have a louder voice.
Yeah,
people used to yell. Now they have a megaphone the world can hear. And that's wherein the biggest problem lies. But and you would have had people trying to draw that comparison instead of having people say, well, you know, we need to get Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla to do a man comic so that we can stem the tide of the chicks taking over the books.
Right.
I just think, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more.
Welcome to the man comic.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing we're going to talk about, because we've gone long and I don't care, we can go long.
Yeah. I do want to point out that the man comic does come polybagged with a pair of truck balls
hanging off the back. Yeah. Calvin pissing on Hobbes, it's a yin-yang thing. It's
one tiger, two cups.
Oh, really? Good God.
Drop mic is
something that I want to touch on, however briefly we touch on it, the idea of the media, the comics now spilling over into TV and movies, where, you know, I always say this and Cole gets so mad at me, but I don't care. We currently live in a golden age of media comic saturation. Like, I think it's hit its point now. We've got movies scheduled out through, like, 2020 for comic books. We've got, I'm pretty sure every day of the week, barring one, as long as it's, you know, the time for new shows to be on, we can watch a comic book TV show every night of the week. We can expect, what, four different series on Netflix in the near future?
Yeah, all building up to the Defenders.
A Defenders TV show. You know, we've got
who'd have thought the Defenders? I mean,
we've got,
course,
a,
you know, who'd have thought?
I'm still
Guardians
mad that Terry
Galaxy.
Crews. Yeah, I'm still mad Terry Crews isn't Luke Cage.
But right,
I'll,
but what
I'll
are
get
you gonna
over
do?
It.
Damn, Gina, I'm still mad about that. You know, we've got a not Batman TV show on TV right now.
Yeah.
We've got a show about Constantine. Of everybody who you could possibly imagine having a comic book TV show about, Constantine would have been like the 800th on my list.
Oh, yeah. I even, as unlikely as a Defenders TV show would have been, if I was just pulling things out, I would have put Defenders well before Constantine.
But yet, there it is, and it was popular enough.
It's actually
enough.
Really good to me.
I just want to see someone suit up in the old Avco Embassy swamp thing suit.
Yeah, right.
Remember that time Constantine smoked Swamp Thing? That was great.
Smoot.
He like takes a little branch off it, rolls it up, and lights it. I'm just like, what just happened?
Was that Kathy Bates in American Horror Story? Smoot.
What was that accent?
I was trying to capture that voice the other night. I was talking to Andrew, and I couldn't do it, and you just nailed it. Smoot.
Smoot.
Hey, lobster boy. He's, okay, now it's starting to sound like a... I went into Simpsons.
You did. You know, yeah. But yeah, so where do we stand here? Is this a bad thing? Is this a good thing? What do we got?
I think it's both. I know that Cole will probably have a more educated opinion, being the veteran that he is, on this specific topic. But I think with the way Marvel is doing their movies, I think there's two separate like medias here to talk about. I think with the way Marvel's doing movies, you've got like Captain America 2 is The Fugitive starring Steve Rogers, which is great.
The best movie I've seen all year.
And then you've got like Thor, which is like your medieval fantasy. And I think the reason why it works so well with the way Marvel does it is that each movie is something different, but still keeping to a consistent universe.
Yes.
I think it's going to start eventually getting to the point where they're getting to a point now where they don't have a reason for these characters not to be crossing over in each other's movies. I think that's one of the things that I'm getting kind of miffed at, is that they don't start doing this, like, having a new Captain America or having a new, you know, Iron Man movie or having a new Thor movie every single year, I think is overdoing it, when you could easily put two heroes in one movie and fill in the spot with, like, you know, they're coming out with Black Panther and Captain Marvel, for example. I think that there's a lot of decisions that Marvel could make to keep it from getting stale. And Guardians of the Galaxy kind of helped with that with this last phase. Ant-Man, I would have really liked to have seen before Avengers, but apparently it's happening at the end now.
Right.
But I think that with the way Marvel does their movies, I think it works only because each movie has a separate identity. I think the reason why it hasn't been working, in my opinion, for DC is because everything is so dark and gloomy and everything is serious. And
absolutely. Because after Nolan's, Dark Knight or the...
People smelled money.
Well, what they saw was, especially after the Dark Knight, not so much with Batman Begins.
Yeah.
But by Dark Knight, what the studio did not see is the Dark Knight was successful, not because it was a great Batman movie, but because it was a great movie.
Yeah.
It was a great movie. It just happened to be a Batman movie. But what they saw, though, was, okay, here's a superhero movie that was successful beyond our wildest dreams. What made it that way? It was dark. That's what sells. Dark sells. Okay, get rid of this stupid fun Shazam movie. Make Green Lantern as dark as possible. Dark, dark, dark. Everything has to be...
I've listened to their official, like, interviews and stuff like that. Like, well, we don't believe we need to make, like, little comedy jokes and stuff like that. I'm like, well, that's the reason I watch Marvel, because, damn it, man, I don't go to a movie to be depressed the whole time. Like,
right.
I want to have some fun.
What they don't understand is you have to treat each property as an individual entity within a greater universe.
Yeah.
Batman will play darker than Superman. A dark Superman doesn't work as well as a dark Superman works as well as a light Batman to a modern audience. You could not feel the Adam West Batman today.
No.
It would not work by any stretch. The closest you're going to get is that Aquaman and Brave and the Bold. But
the Brian Blessed Aquaman.
Yeah, the Brian Blessed / Freddie Mercury Aquaman.
Right.
But the thing about it is, where Marvel is succeeding is they played a long game.
Yeah, they planned it all. Like, freaking Justice League, they're like, we're planning out the Justice League movie before we've even shown you any of these characters. And it's like, Marvel took like 10 years to build this crap up, guys. Like, why are you trying to rush to the finish line?
And this is, oddly enough, what's weird is, this is DC Warner as the, you know, under the, with the ownership of DC, doing what Marvel as a comic company always did when DC did something great.
Right.
Marvel's like, yeah, we got one of those too. It'll be out tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
We spent 5 years developing this thing. What are you talking about, Marvel? And what's odd is, it seems like the opposite is now true
on
in
TV.
Cinematic sense. And
like,
on TV, yeah.
If you look at the TVs, like, I love the DC shows more than I like the Marvel show. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I know it gets better. I've tried to like it. I've watched most of the first season. I've tried to watch some of the second season because, you know, Winter Soldier, they were all building up to that. They couldn't do anything. I get it. But, like, when I watched, like, Arrow, for example, Arrow season 2 was awesome. Flash, I'm in love with beyond all comprehension. And Constantine, I absolutely adore. But it's like, wow, there's all these really good TV shows for DC. Why can't they put any of this in their movies?
Like, yeah.
Why do I not feel any heart and soul in their movies? Like, why are every character's cardboard cutouts now? Because they're too afraid to embrace comic bookness. Like, I feel like people are too...
That's the topic. There you go.
Like, I feel like people are too afraid to go, guys, this is a comic book movie. Have some fun with it. Like, oh, yeah, Superman should not always be a Jesus allegory. Like, sometimes you can make him just be this lame-ass kid who wants to save the world. Like, my favorite Superman movie is still Superman 2. I'm sorry. Like, it will always be my favorite Superman movie. Because Christopher Reeves actually had, like, Christopher Reeves Superman actually had to come with the whole decision of, should I be Superman? Do I want to be Superman? Like, is this something that I want to do? And it was, at least it had to do with the legacy of the role of the character. Whereas, like, in Man of Steel, he just kind of stares off into the distance the whole movie.
Right. I agree.
And going back very briefly to the whole, like, say, building toward the Avengers, which, you know, that made that first ad campaign when you, you know, that you first get the solid confirmation this is happening with the some assembly required.
Right.
It's brilliant. Because they built, you know, we've been giving you this piecemeal, and now we're going to, you've got all the parts, let's play. What DC is doing, it's almost like, go online and look up, I believe the, it's a short film, fan film called Grayson, I believe.
Yeah.
And pull that up after you listen to the show. Look at Grayson, and you will see Dawn of Justice.
Right.
Because what Grayson does, it's like, hey, I know a guy who's got a great bitchin' Green Lantern costume, and I know a chick that, you know, does cosplay as Wonder Woman, and let's throw this in, and this in, and this in, and this in, and there's so many things that are just extraneously thrown in. And I remember, you know, there was a period where the fan films, of course, Batman Dead End was the one that sort of put that on the map, and then you had the World's Finest that the same guy did, which was, you know, both of them were good, but they were still fanboy films.
Yeah.
And the Grayson tries to put itself together as a trailer, and the problem with those type of things is the trailers always tell a cohesive beginning to end story.
They try to tell you to be hyped instead of making you hyped. Like, yeah.
But
that's
these fake trailers, though, tell you beginning to end. They're not put together like a trailer would be, where it's all broken up.
Yeah.
They sort of start like, you know, here's Dick Grayson starting his day, and here's Dick Grayson straight through the bitter end. And it's like, no, that's not how that would have been put together as a trailer. Either you do a short film, or you do a trailer that acts like a trailer and just show, oh, look what we did. You can't have it both ways. But if you look at that, that to me is what Dawn of Justice feels like already.
Yeah. It feels
it's like let's throw some stuff in, and we got this and this and this. It's like,
every time they announced a new hero, I was just like, why? Like, they're like, oh, Cyborg's going to be in this movie now. Oh, now Wonder Woman's in it.
Yeah, it's like
what?
Who's writing this? An 8-year-old?
You hit it on the head. The Dawn of Justice movie is the trailer for their expanded universe.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's not
a
movie.
2-hour trailer.
It stopped being a movie about Batman and Superman, which could have been The Dark Knight Returns, which could have been fantastic. But
and
no,
it
now
have
it's a trailer.
Set up a greater DCU.
Yeah, it's a trailer
and
for the next.
Could still have had
now.
Other characters in there,
right?
But not in the capacity where you're just sort of falling them into place. It doesn't work.
Well, like, for example, the DC shows do what Marvel does in their movies, which I think is why the DC shows are better. Like, my favorite thing right now is the fact that Flash and Arrow have this Hercules Xena thing going on. Like, they constantly make references to each other, and like, they're constantly talking about stuff in each other's universes. And I'm like, that to me is more of a rad. Like, if I had like a Batman movie, and then like I had like a Superman movie where Clark talks about Gotham sometimes or shit like that, like, that would be more cool to me than all of the shiny special effects fights in the entire world.
Right.
Because, like,
oh, yeah.
The
when
special effects fights
Bruce,
are great. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, if he would have been like, if I would have gone, you know, last week when I went to lunch with Bruce in Gotham, you know, and you're like, oh,
like
I know who that is!
Yeah, because, like, Barry, like, says things like, oh, yeah, did you speak with Oliver? Like, is everything okay? And stuff like that. And, like, that kind of stuff keeps me invested because it reminds me that they don't have to tell me, or they don't have to, like, keep throwing it in my face that these worlds are connected. They are connected. And that's the same thing in Avengers. Like, when they're like, oh yeah, Stark helped us reinvent these helicopter carriers after getting a up-close and personal view at the propellers the last time he got thrown in. Like, that, to me, little references like that are way better at world-building than all of the fancy fights and super, like, throw Batman and Superman in your face.
And that goes back, again, oddly enough, to DC on television, is if you go back to the John Wesley Shipp Flash.
Yeah, baby.
Even though you were never going to get anything else, ever, as far as you knew.
Right.
Back then, especially. This was it. You were never going to get any other spinoffs or anything else. But even though they rarely had him fighting anybody other than, you know, gangster or mobster of the week, early on, and then little by little they kind of gave you some sort of facsimile of his rogues gallery. There were always these things like, you know, the scientist chick with mentioned something about having to receiving a call from Dr. Carter Hall.
Yes.
Or Star Labs would be mentioned, or, you know, you would see somebody's name dropped in a computer screen, or little things like they would do in the X-Men movies where you'd see like a...
Name dropping Stephen Strange in the middle of Captain America.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like X-Men, when they talked about was it the second X-Men movie where they had the list that everybody was trying to decipher? And All right, I'm stopping.
That was
this.
The best on a computer screen list since the list of Johns in Buckaroo Banzai.
That's how I know it's time to stop the show.
That's right. I vote Buckaroo Banzai.
All right, so let's do some plugs and get out of here. Let's do the final plugs or the first plugs of 2014-2015 and get out of here for the night. I want to say this first of all. Jeremy, you were a dream to have on the show. Thank you so much, man. That was awesome. And when you get the stuff going, you let us know and we will plug the hell out of it, okay?
Well, thanks, man.
Absolutely.
Cole, Jeremy, do you have anything you want to plug yet?
No, not yet. No.
Okay.
We will plug it for you.
Right. Cole has no shame when it comes to plugging family and friends.
I tell you, that's right. And speaking of shameless plugs, of course, we're coming to you through the auspices of the Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com, which is the home of this and many other fine podcasts, including two live shows, three a month that come out from through the amazing work of our friend Jansen over at Deep Ellum On Air at deepellumonair.com, and where we have live shows that stream out of Dallas, Texas. We have Hey Kids Comics Live on the second Saturday of every month, which we promise in the new year will be on the second Saturday of the month.
Hopefully.
Yes, we hopefully promise or promise hopefully. And then, of course, we have the Rantcore Pit Live with myself and Eddie Medina every other Sunday. We have just finished our 19th episode. It's hard to believe nearly 40 weeks of this. We have near a year. You can find the occasional tweet when I bother on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. You can write to us, and please feel free to write to jcumail@yahoo.com. We have the Jedi Cole Universe YouTube,
which we promise more of.
I'm going to write angry letters.
You should, please.
Oh, please do. Yeah, we need an angry old man letter. In fact, right now, I want to ask. We haven't done one of these in over a year. The Hey Kids Comics Presents.
Yes.
Please write to us. Ask us stuff. Tell us stuff. Suggest stuff that you'd like for us to talk about, and we will do a show where we address. Especially questions asked.
Questions,
you know, if
concerns.
Know who would win in a fight.
We can't do that.
But
no.
We don't want to pick sides. It's basically,
really,
we don't want to hurt any feelings.
We already go to enough families' houses for Christmas. We don't need anymore.
Right. But you know, talk to us. Ask us some questions about, you know, how do you think this would pan out, or what should these things be doing? What have you? We want to do another show where we interact with you, our listeners. All over the world, which I want to say 2014 has been an insane year.
Yes, it has.
I don't know how the JCU is huge in Ukraine.
We're big in the Ukraine.
We're big in the Ukraine. Bless you guys. Number two for the year.
The Ukraine?
For all time. Number two, Ukraine. Telling Russia to suck it, who come in at number five.
That's right. That's right.
We love all of the listeners all over the globe.
It's the budding democracy in the Ukraine. That's
I do want to challenge. I have to challenge Australia. You fell out of the top 10 listings. You're slowly coming back, but I hadn't seen Australia on the list in a while. Thank you to whoever was tuning us in Bangladesh last week.
Peace.
That was amazing. I think
mad love for Bangladeshis.
And also because, what'd you think, Sohn Bobby Blahey was in Thailand.
That might have something to do with it.
A week or so ago, we actually had hits out of Thailand. I don't think he was promoting, but somehow
his mere presence
there alerted the people of Thailand to tune in. So thank you for that. Really, honestly, thank you for everyone around the world. It is always fun to see where we're being tuned in. You know, as we speak, someone in the Philippines is...
I want to say, you know, thanks. Thank you to everyone, and thank you to all our amazing friends and people that have become family to Hey Kids Comics and the JCU in general. You know, thank you to
all
guys.
Of our guests for this show, the live show, who've made this just that much more wonderful. Otherwise, it'd just be a couple of goofballs yakking about comics.
Which we are anyway, but, you know, and I have one resolution for the next year, just one, okay? And that resolution is this. I will, by 2016, have Cole send one single text message. That's all I'm asking, one text message by 2016, and then he will be fully unfrozen. Jeremy, thank you, man, for ending the year and starting the year on such a high note. This is this will go down in my personal history as one of my favorite shows in my top five. And I'm looking so forward to seeing what you do with your YouTube channel and your podcasts and all the things that you're going to do. It's going to be amazing. You've got a unique voice, and I can't wait to hear more of it, man.
Well, crap, I can't follow up with that.
And
can't reach these expectations, man.
To everybody else out there that's listening and has an idea to do a show, do it. Don't let anything stop you this year. Just get out there and make your voice heard.
Absolutely. Just the only piece of advice I can give to anyone who wants to do this sort of thing, never forget you have an audience.
That's right. Never forget.
Do what you love, but remember you have an audience that you want to entertain. Otherwise, you would have no audience.
Otherwise, you're not going to have an audience for long.
And real quick on the convention front, do remember the 2015 listings are now almost completely up. Still researching a few more. There'll be a few more additions in the next few days. But 2015 is already shaping up to be a huge year for conventions in Texas again. And I'm sure that I will be kept busy again all year long updating it. But check out Convention Awareness Project Texas at the new abbreviated version, www.cap-tx.info, which will take you to the Convention Awareness Project. You can see a full listing of 2015 conventions. Click on the name of any convention listed, and it will take you to their website for more details.
And join us in the next coming year for more YouTube stuff, for more shows, more story arcs, more guests, more live panels, more live shows. Just everything is getting better and better. Thank you again, Jeremy. Thank you, as always, Cole. And thank you, listeners, for making 2014 an amazing year. I think we're out. Are we out? We're out?
Yep. We are out. But I would remind people, as we always do, about what they should do with comics.
Oh, they should. They should buy, collect, and enjoy their comics in 2014, if you're a time traveler. And don't do it in the 1800s.
Or if you're living in the past.
That's right. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.